Hello and welcome back to Kitchen Curiosity, the podcast that delves into the heart of food service and hospitality industry. I'm here today in the studios in Canary Wharf, and I've got two gentlemen from the UK, Steve Witt and Glenn Roberts. Steve from Ecofast and Glenn from Winterhalter UK. And I've also got Steve's colleague, who's sales director from Ecofast Italy, Giovanni Rosconi. We're going to be talking about food waste in this podcast. It's a subject we've not really covered, and how it applies mainly the UK market, and then also hopefully a little bit about the European and possibly the wider world. So let's get on with the show. And Steve, welcome to the show. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Thanks for having us.
So, how was your journey, Canary Wharf?
Oh, it was great, actually. It was quite simple. Nice and relaxed. Little bit of a walk. Got the steps up.
So, yeah.
Elizabeth Line. Great. We were saying the difference between the old and the new is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Nice and clean.
Although it is a bit of a walk at times, that one, isn't it? But So just for the listeners, if you don't mind, can we just talk a little bit about you and your career, how you got into kind of food service equipment, and then more sort of recently, if you like, whatever, however long it is, food waste?
Well, actually, my first job in food service was to redesign the food waste equipment.
So was it?
In the year 2000, I was employed by Paul Pascal at IMC to redevelop the small dewatering equipment. And then, as usually the case with bigger companies, you get distracted and, yeah, probably didn't get round to it until about 7 years later when the regulations were starting to change. So, yeah, been developing systems for 26 years. I think if you go back at the older technology, it was very of its age, very 90s design. And then latterly teamed up with Ecofast with their new spin-drying technology, the second-generation spin-drying technology, rather than dewatering, which we can talk about a bit later. But there is a distinct difference.
Okay.
So that's how I got into the food service market. Yeah, so from what I was designing, thermal fluid boilers for the marine sector, and then playing with some of the smaller equipment we've got here, it was a bit of a step change, really. So,
okay, so for people that are not familiar with Ecofast, can you explain it in simple terms?
Probably not, but I'll
give
it a go.
Yeah,
so Ecofast are, if you go back to 1998, the technology that we see on the market now was designed by Ecofast. And then that was adopted by other companies within the food service sectors, the manufacturers. But the spin drying technology specifically is what Ecofast are responsible for. So if you look at most of the applications, dewatering applications on the market now, the core design was developed by Ecofast, pure and simple. Right. So we develop food waste solutions for the food service market. So anywhere from staff canteens through to schools to the NHS and everyone in between. We're able to scale up and scale down utilising the technology as it stands today.
For processing food waste,
yeah.
Okay. And obviously you're mainly targeted on the UK market, I think.
And the Middle East.
And the Middle East, okay. So if we talk about the UK market, what's changed in the last 5 years?
I think if you go back to when I joined the industry in the year 2000, the talking point was that macerators were going to get banned.
Yeah. And that's all like to the drain, if we like.
Yeah. So ultimately, it's 26 years, it's 25 years with the legislation change in the UK last 31st of March last year. Yeah, we're still searching for solutions. We're still developing solutions. We're still engineering solutions. And for us, one glove doesn't fit all. So the applications from everything from an NHS site through a consultant-driven project, totally different drivers, really. So, yeah.
So those, the macerators, like the waste disposal units, the drain, they've only just recently been banned in England. Is that
so the changes in England are a restriction. DEFRA don't like to use the word banned, but they dovetail back into the food waste hierarchy. So obviously, reduce, minimise, recycle are at the top of the tree. Incineration, obviously, the bottom of the tree. But also macerating what is a very energy-rich food source, or food waste, into biofuel is the way that the government wants to go in the UK.
Yeah.
Scotland started it. in 2012, 2013.
They were ahead of the game, really.
Way ahead of the game.
A decade almost.
Yeah, well, over, really, by the time it came in. Northern Ireland followed suit a couple of years after that, and then it's taken England's.
England and Wales longer.
Well, Wales have gone a completely different route. I'm not quite sure whether that'll be reviewed shortly with everyone else's policies. But, yeah, I mean, all you have to do is walk through city centres to see bins of food waste everywhere. So,
and in the Middle East, you said that's the market that you look after as well.
Yeah, so, again, there's distinct. So Ecofast UK look after North America, Middle East, UK.
Right.
And then Ecofast Italia look after the rest of the world as such. So, yeah, the Middle East, if I'm honest, they seem to be following the route the UK's gone.
The UK standards.
Yeah. So not maybe as strict, but they're getting there. So ultimately, the consultant-driven projects is where we tend to be. And we see a lot of dewatering solutions being added to everything from stadia through to the same stuff, canteens or banks or anything like that. So, yeah, so there seems to be a similar footprint. It does help that I think a lot of the consultants based out of the UK tend to have offices.
Yeah,
exactly. So it's you get a winning formula and you tend to copy that. So,
do operators see like food waste as just like a compliance issue they've got to deal with, or is it a cost, or is it both?
I think a bit of both. I mean, if you look at the legislation, obviously reuse, recycle is paramount importance, and that's the message driven by all the devolved governments in the UK. I think the technology can give operators a good return on investment, especially if you're spin drying, you're dewatering, you're reducing that volume for collection. It's still ready for curbside collection, which is the preferred government route. There are other things you can tag on to the back of it. So you mentioned about macerators, then you don't have to remove macerators. You can add a dewater to them. So imagine the NHS estate, the amount of macerators they've purchased over the years. Removing those is a cost to the taxpayer, really. Mm. But to be compliant, you can attach dewatering systems to them. You can reduce your volume. So,
and when people are designing kitchens, consultants or distributors or whoever, what's the biggest mistakes you're seeing?
I think historically, when designing a kitchen, food waste management, Glenn, correct me if he thinks I'm wrong on this one, it was always the last thing that someone thought of. And it was usually, when it came to value engineering a project, it's the first thing that gets taken out to free up some of the budget. To some extent, I do think that opinion has changed. Not totally. But again, you were talking about the reasons for doing it from an operator's point of view. Reduction of food waste collections, reduction in the carbon footprint of that operation. Space saving as well, especially in inner cities. That's a huge driver. More so probably than the return on investment at the moment. And then the return on investment, as the collection prices creep up, the return on investment gets better. So there's quite a few reasons to look at
food waste
solutions.
Yeah, because so, I mean, I'm right in saying that, you know, if you're not processing it, it can be quite heavy, those bins.
Very heavy.
And you pay by weight for collection.
It's weird. There are two ways of looking at it. Bin volumes, frequency of bins, and that historically has always been the driver, just the number of bins and reducing that. Obviously, with regulations, now the bin collections have gone up. We see people overfilling the bins. So if you've ever tried to move a wheelie bin full of food waste, it could be 150 kilos, which is impossible to move. So there are standards. There are ISO standards for the weights of bins allowable. So if you look at a 240-litre wheelie bin, you shouldn't be filling it much beyond 90, 95 kilos.
Yeah.
Otherwise, the collection companies will just charge you more. So,
okay.
The beauty of the systems that we operate, we have a bin full sensor, so we can set it to however people want it. So if you wanted a slightly lighter bin just for the ease of moving it around, you can set that.
I guess if it's too heavy, they'll just not take it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've all experienced that.
And then, and obviously you've got the balance of underfilling it and having more bins to collect them. So it's a balancing act. But I think most people were paying on number of bins were being collected. We are seeing an increased weight cost associated with that, especially with manual handling, more so.
What would be the typical, I mean, if you look like a hotel, what would be a could you say it's like a typical saving or like I say, a four-star hotel in London or I don't know? Or
so we, I mean, if you look at some of the projects we've done in the past, some people are 4 months return on investment because...
4 months?
4 months, just because of the, wow. the frequency of collection in a London as well. If you then look at where we would target someone, if someone was to ask us to look at a kitchen solution, we'd want to be 2 years, definitely under 3 years return on investment. So from a fiscal standpoint, then that makes a lot of sense to the accountants for a start. But obviously, once you've paid that off, then the rest is just saving. So,
yeah. Profit, if you like.
Yeah. And then there's you get into the whole conversation about whether it's a CapEx or an OpEx spend that you want to save money on the kitchen operations, or if you're renovating a kitchen, then you'd probably put it in the CapEx. So,
and you obviously talked there about dewaterers and composters and vacuum systems, where they got their different places. And
well, I think it depends what your opinion of the circular economy is and where you want to go. So for us, I think composting is a great solution for, say, large hotels, golf sites. It's a very nice message. It's a very much eco message. If you want to, and it depends purely down to the establishments and the distances involved between kitchens. So we tend to find most of our equipment installed into warewash areas, but you do tend to see some of our equipment being in the prep areas. So some people want a piped-in system. Depending the distance then you'd be looking at possibly going beyond dewatering into a vacuum system. But the vacuum systems come at a price.
Yeah.
You also have the options more prevalent in Europe of pumped tank systems, which Giovanni's got a lot more experience than us on. But from a vacuum point of view, the cost is huge. You don't tend to reduce the volume, but you reduce the frequency. And again, I said earlier, it's one glove doesn't fit all. It's whether it suits the
operation,
the operations or not. So, good example, Imperial College London. They empty it every 6 weeks.
Right, okay.
So for them, the importance was reducing the frequency of tanker collections. So, but the volume is huge. So
yeah.
You're looking at 9,000 litres every six weeks. So, but that slurry goes direct to an AD plant, anaerobic digestion, which then turns it into biogas and electricity.
Oh, okay.
So it's a nice message. But then also the curbside collection. So when you spin dry it or you dewater it, you're reducing the volume. It's also going to AD. So you have that nitrogen-rich food, which is perfect for not only creating biogas, but also composting as well. So, again, it depends what route you want to take.
Okay. And just to come to the end of this section of the podcast, is there anything, any myth you could debunk or anything you hear that about food waste, people talking about?
I suppose maybe not so much myths, but I think that we talked earlier about dewatering versus spin drying. There is a distinct difference. The dewatering technology of old was a glorified cider press, if you like. it was an auger with a counterweight. Now, if you put food waste in your hand and squeeze it, it's just going to ooze through your fingers. So the change in spin drying technology, the use of a different term, is purely that. You spin dry it. You don't put it under any load. So what you have going to drain is a tiny fraction of what historically was. Unfortunately, if you look at, say, myths, most people say dewatering doesn't work, or it does work, but you're putting too much down the drain. Well, that is the myth. If you look at the spin drying technology now, it rotates vastly superior speeds. You're not squeezing it. You are literally, like a washing machine cycle at home, you are removing the water. You do have solids, some small particles going to drain. But when we tested them with DEFRA and WRC, the water content is amazing, the difference. It really is.
Okay.
It's fascinating how little goes to drain now. So,
okay. Well, Steve, thank you for that. I'm going to ask you to take a short break while I go on to talk to Giovanni and also to Glenn, if that's okay. So now I'm going to welcome the sales director from Ecofast Italy, Giovanni. Welcome to the show.
Yeah. Nice to meet you. And I'm very happy to be here with you guys today and for this opportunity.
Perfect. And you flew in from Italy yesterday?
Yeah. flew. It was a nice flight. Arrived in London at 11. I had time to enjoy a bit and give some rounds in London. It's always amazing to give some rounds in London. It's such a unique city in the world, for sure.
So, bit of sightseeing and a bit of English food, maybe. Or did you go to Italian restaurants?
No, not Italian. Actually, I went to Starbucks to take a coffee.
So, as I like to really start with the podcast, is just talk a few personal questions, if it's okay. Just maybe talk about whereabouts Italy you originate from, maybe some early years experiences, and then how you eventually got into food service equipment.
Of course. So I'm Giovanni Rusconi, and I'm 32 this year. And I've been always in contact with this topic, food waste management, and because my father is the owner of the founder of Ecofast Italia.
Okay.
And he's a very passionate engineer. So he had always the pleasure to share his vision and his work with me since the beginning. And consider that I'm from 93 and the enterprise is founded in 1998. It's a topic that has always been a part of my life, let's say, Ecofast. But yes, nowadays I'm, since 2 years and a half, I'm sales responsible for sales in Ecofast Italia. But my early study, I mean, I'm not coming from economics or marketing. My study are biotechnology.
Okay.
I had the opportunity to study in Portugal biotechnology, and also work in a research lab in Italy, in Portugal, in Spain. And so I've been always fascinated by nature and nature-based solution. And this allowed me to start this journey in the food waste management with a view on a circular economy approach, how to valorize something that is used to be wasted. I think that this background that I had allowed me to have a different approach to this topic. I mean, now I'm sales manager, but I joined the enterprise before doing some research in collaboration with the university on how to use and to manage what is the output of our technology. And I see technology as a tool to make waste management smarter, more fluid, more clean, more. I think it can be a technology that the technology helps all the stakeholders involved in the waste valorization chain, let's say.
Okay. And do you look after Italy or also just Italy or the world as well? Or?
Well, although I'm Italian, I have to say that Italy has not been such a fertile soil for our business. So among the years, Ecofast Italia had to look a bit around the world.
Yeah.
And we usually work through trained distributors.
Yeah.
This is our main approach. And because, of course, it's important to have someone that is trained, that you can trust all over the world, that helps also, because, of course, our mother tongue is Italian. So sometimes the language can be a barrier, the culture can be a barrier. So having someone that you can trust and is active direct on the site is very important. So our, let's say, standard business approach was through distributors. And this differentiates a bit us from maybe from UK, that would say that 80% is consultant-based, the business. So there are, of course, some difference. And I hope that also in Italy we can do some business as well, more business, let's say, because of course it's easy when you are you have the business close to your home and speak with people that speak the same language. This helps, let's say, it helps in business.
How does food waste? Obviously, we talk about food waste,
and
that's what Ecofast is all about. And how does it differ across Europe from, say, the UK? I mean, would like to think that Europe should be kind of combined on their strategy, but is it different, say, to Portugal, to Italy, to Germany, to
all over European markets, the goal is the same. The kitchen needs a practical, hygienic and efficient way to handle an unavoidable waste. And our technology is based on three main principles, let's say, which are the proximity, because it's a technology that operates directly at the point of waste generation. The second pillar is simplicity, is a technology that is easy to use and very intuitive. And the third is the cleanliness. It keeps all the back of the house very hygienic. And I think that these three principles are universally relevant. Mm-hmm. But of course, there are some differences among all the countries. And for example, I would mention in France, there are national initiatives that in school they incentivate like food waste technology for educational purpose. So students they have a hands-on experience on this technology. And I would also mention like Germany or Austrian, they look for technology that we call tank-based solution. So everything is macerated and the food waste is macerated and goes inside the tank. The tank is filled and there is a clear pathway on the waste valorization. So all the stakeholders, as I was mentioned before, are involved. And this tank is emptied and the material became biogas because it's a carbon-rich material that can be transformed in energy and other resources through to composting, like recovering resources, nutrients, and this.
Okay. So, I mean, you're saying that Italy maybe it's not as advanced as, say, some other countries with food waste. But from what I've seen when I've travelled in Italy, that there is incentives for sustainability from the government to try to help. Is that correct? Or
yeah, I would say that, in my opinion, Italian kitchen are a bit behind sustainability, I would say, compared to other countries, like maybe northern countries. And for sure, we have a cultural deep respect for food.
Yeah.
And for waste, food waste. And nowadays, with this business tracking ESG reporting reports that are appearing, for sure, Italy, as all the Europe in general, are going to be more, let's say, with a focus on sustainability.
Yeah.
But I think there is a lot of job to be done. But yes, in Italy, we are trying to promoting a solution, as probably Steve mentioned before, where if you have like a green area, if you are a resort in the rural area, you can valorize the food waste into compost.
Yeah.
And I think it's an aspect, an important aspect, because our technology integrates with other technology. So by using a spin grinding and spin drying technology, you can integrate this technology and have a lot of advantage if you want to convert this sub-product, I would say, into a resource that is compost, that is carbon that is going to be back in nature, in the cycle of nature, and is useful for gardening, for agricultural purposes, for landscaping. So is a clear circular economy pathway, yeah. Let's say.
And do you see the technology being used differently in different countries, or is it widely adopted the same?
Yes, there are some difference among the countries. Most of our technology is installed directly inside the kitchen, okay? So it's working with a continuous flow, for example, and with water that is coming out, and because in the kitchen is important to have a water flow that keep everything very clean. While there is other realities, experience in, for example, in other country, East country, where you have a special room, a waste room for the technology. Okay, so maybe there you have a different technology that works different in a way that is a batch feeding system. So food waste is loaded inside the machine, and through an automatic auger, the grinding unit is fed by food waste. Of course, it's important to have a clean stream of food waste because if you put metal parts inside, it's not very good for the machine. So there are some peculiarity that you have to take in consideration. But yes, our technology is composed mainly, well, there is a grinding unit, there is a pump, and there is a spin dryer, okay? These are the three technology that of our system. And for example, in where you have in Austria, the tank-based solution, you just have a grinder and a pump, and everything goes inside the tank. That's so you don't have the spin dryer. So it's the same technology. No, it's part of the same technology that is being applied in a different way, okay?
Okay, well, thank you for that. I'm going to actually, again, just take a short break. I'm going to go on to talk to Glenn and invite you back at the end, if that's okay.
Okay.
Thanks. So now I'm joined by Glenn Roberts, who's National Head of Sales for Winterhalter UK. Glenn, how are you?
I'm very good, actually, thank you. And what a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you for joining us in the studio. You've not travelled maybe as far as Italy, but still no less, that's just as important.
But as was mentioned, I've come from the western extremity of the Elizabeth Line today, so I hopped on it that side. So very nice to come through London in a very simple, clean, easy way and much quicker.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, obviously for our UK listeners, a lot of people, Glenn, they know who you are. But for our wider audience, do you want to just sort of talk a bit about early career years, getting into, and how you got into food service?
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about myself. So I was born and brought up on a farm in the middle of West Sussex. And
whereabouts in West Sussex?
Between Billingshurst and Whisper Green.
Oh, okay. I actually was Thacombe.
My mother went to school in Thacombe.
Oh, okay.
Just before the war, I presume it would have been, in fairness. And that area of Thacombe, West Chortington, and now the centre of the burgeoning wine business and vineyards in the UK. So my relationship with food started very early on because we were on a tied cottage. So therefore, a lot of what we ate was what we either caught or grew. So that was very much part of what we were then doing as children, was doing that. And then sort of growing up, perhaps like many people, fell into the world that we're all in. I went to catering college in the late 70s after leaving school and after leaving a year of not knowing what to do, and started off at catering college and did 3 years at that. And then worked as a caterer for 10, 11 years.
Okay.
So into my early 30s, and then realised I'd like a life. Because lots of my friends were actually having a life and doing things with people through the evening and not working hard through long hours, which I thoroughly enjoyed, don't get me wrong. And then found myself coming into the world of supply chain of equipment, and like many people, fell into that somehow. And there was an advert in the back of the caterer advertising for a salesperson in West London for Lockhart catering equipment.
Oh, okay, yes.
So I joined that back in the early 90s. And so since then, I've been involved in the world of equipment of various shapes and sizes, both as distributor, tabletop for a period of time, and then capital equipment for the vast majority of it.
And how long have you been with Winterhalter now?
It'll be 8 years into September.
Cool.
Yes. So, yeah.
And your role within Winterhalter, what is that? I mean,
well, it's basically heading up the sales, what we do, and working with our excellent team of very dedicated, very professional guys who live, eat, sleep, and breathe what we do as a very specialist company. You know, it probably gets forgotten on occasions, is we're still a family-owned business.
Right, okay.
A family-owned business owned by the Winterhalter family that is nudging over €500 million turnover worldwide across in excess of 40 subsidiaries around the world doing what we do. Now, it does make us one-trick ponies, but we're very good one-trick ponies. And what we do is specialise in what we specialise in, which is the world of warewashing, glass washing, dishwashing, utensil washing, and providing solutions for our customers that we believe drive the least amount of energy and the least amount of water usage, and therefore the least amount of chemical usage. And where we're particularly prominent at the moment and really developing a real headwind with is the use of connectivity and equipment to enable operators to, at a touch of a button, understand exactly what's happening in their multiple locations around a country or in their own establishment to find out how it's operating so you can optimise performance.
Is that being quite widely adopted, or is it still...
The traction is really growing now, actually, Bradford. It really is. And I think that the people have and do have eureka moments when they realise what it means to them and their businesses. And basically what it drills down to is you can save time, effort and money.
Yeah.
And it's a real benefit to you as a business. If you understand what is going on in your premises on a second by second, minute by minute, hour by hour, day by day basis, you can control costs and particularly optimize performance. And when you nuance that into service and support and after sales care, you're optimizing the performance again, but you're elongating the life cycle of the product. So that return on capital employed becomes much more interesting to people who are investing in product. And the issue that we probably meet with is that fixation on back of house and the have to have, not want to have part of the kitchen is not shared by our customers.
Yeah.
It is an afterthought in some ways, as was picked up earlier on as well. But it is a fundamental building block of what your business is based on.
Yeah, of course.
And if you can operate that with less people or use them in a much more intelligent way at different times of the day, week or month, and then you can utilize that piece of equipment to improve your efficiency, guess what? It's a winner.
Yeah.
And you should be looking
and
at
save
it.
Money.
And as an ex-caterer myself, spending a lot of time trying to optimize those performances and juggle staff rotas, people and results, what you don't want to be doing is trying to eventually find a clean plate to put a meal on. Or you might get the third or fourth pint glass or glass in a bar that's clean enough to put a drink in. You know, that fundamentally is A, appalling, but B, where we are in lots of parts of the market.
Yeah, we've all had a glass of the lipstick on or whatever it is.
And it doesn't need and shouldn't happen.
Yeah.
But
okay,
it does.
So, I mean, today we're here talking about, obviously, about food waste, and I know something that Winterhold are involved with. When does food waste become a kind of warewashing issue?
Yeah. It has been touched upon by the real experts in the room here with this earlier, is that it's space and the ergonomics of a systematic design that's put in place either by a consultant from the get-go with, if they're lucky enough to have a clean piece of paper that says, this is the space we need and this is what we need to put into it, or the vast majority of times where the quart is trying to be fitted into a pint pot in a building that was never built or designed to be a catering establishment. So it's where that is compressed into space. And I suppose fundamentally it's a knock-on effect of pretty much all kitchens are probably reduced in size by 15 to 20% in the last decade or two, where people are trying to create as much front of house space to put bums on seats to make money by doing that. And where you've seen that acceleration of both food storage, but also accelerated cooking at close to point service, that's compressed the space as well.
Yeah.
And that naturally has gone back of the house as well. So it is literally the last afterthought of the corner out the back, usually without ventilation, without light, sometimes without doors, and all those things that come along your way. And also lots of complicated existing fabrication or lack of that has to be worked around it. And then, of course, typically what you need is all being part of a system, not just the application of boxes in a space. And that trying to create a natural ergonomic flow from the dump table to the dirties going in to the cleans coming out. So therefore, where the dirties are coming into the dump area is where traditionally the scraping of plates and or how it would then be with gullies, with water continually rushing or whatever it would then be is what we traditionally see or trying to contend with. Saying more and more, we're going to places where the waste disposal process sits there defunct and dead and hasn't worked for years.
Yeah.
And we didn't want to repair it. It's not happening. What do you do with your food waste? It's in a big bin over there. Mm. And what happens with that? Well, it gets picked up once or twice a week, costs us a lot of money, it's problematic, it's difficult. Well, have you? And then the question is, have you considered what we then do? And of course, at time of design, that's where the space needs to be created to insert what is required by the customer and what we believe should be there. And so we want to then work with our business partners to ensure we've got an option that we at least leave the right space and size for it and the right amount of services and drainage
that
needs to be required.
I think it's a fair point. I've seen lots of kind of like waste disposal units just sitting there redundant.
Yeah.
And all the food's going in a bin.
And because people don't a lot of the time don't know what they're for. They would have been perhaps died a couple of years beforehand. Somebody's moved on. They took that decision. It just sits there. Nothing happens.
Yeah.
And we do see it on a far more regular basis than you perhaps anticipate.
Yeah, of course. And how does kind of, how do poor waste systems or processes, like what we maybe talked about, maybe define that as poor, how does that affect dishwasher performance and cost, or doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, ultimately, what's on the plate after eating or scraping is still there as food waste in some way, shape or form. Can I just go back a little bit as well? I think increasingly where we're sitting is that now the drilling down is happening from the operators of trying to reduce food wastage. And as an ex-coach as well, the fundamental is if you're putting too much on a plate or you're putting too much out and you're doing it the wrong way or it's not very good, guess what? It gets thrown away. That's money. That is money down the drain you are losing. It's profit you're losing. It doesn't make any sense. So I think there's a bit of a turnaround how people are thinking about that and trying to reduce it. So I think we're in a better place and that's improving moving forward. But to answer your question is that there will be other ways you can remove the debris that's on a plate. Mm. So that pre-rinsing, pre-washing, there's various techniques where you can screen it and it comes out, but it's retaining the cleanliness of your wash tank for as long as you possibly can. So you're not then continually dumping water and replacing, having to have the energy to replace the heat in the water that you're putting back into the machine. And there's lots of different ways of doing that now with new technology that's raced ahead. So if we were looking at large rack or flight machines and comparing them to products, say, 10, 7, 8 years ago, whatever it might be, it isn't baby steps that have been made in the technology. It's quite giant leaps in many ways. Okay. So when we're looking at some of our older legacy equipment that may be 15, 20 years old, and newer products can save a minimum of 25% in operating costs. And that payback comes back very, very quickly to customers and what they're used to them paying. And also as well with redesigns, you can get more from less.
Okay, so smaller
Yeah, footprint. Smaller footprints could, because we've have to recognise that with the available space that's there. And the costs and the money that's available in a budget at any given moment, particularly when we're doing a lot of replacements are happening in independently owned non-group environments in very, very difficult space areas.
So in the last sort of 10 years, the technology's moved quite dramatically, quite quickly. Yeah.
And I'd love to tell you there's a silver bullet, and there really isn't. And without getting all Dave Brailsford on you, it is that aggregation of incremental gains that really helps and gets to where you need to be with it. So it's saving a little bit in lots of different areas, adds up to a lot.
Okay. Well, great. Thank you for that.
Okay.
We're all going to take a short break and then we're going to come back for a group discussion. Thank you.
Okay.
This episode of Kitchen Curiosity is proudly sponsored by Winterhalter and Ecofast, two companies leading the way in smarter, more sustainable professional kitchens. Winterhalter is the specialist in commercial warewashing, from dishwashers and glass washers to complete system solutions that deliver brilliant hygiene, efficiency and reliability for food service operators of all sizes. Learn more at winterhalter.com. Ecofast provides innovative food waste management solutions designed to reduce waste, volume and weight, minimise environmental impact, and support compliance with food waste legislation. Discover their complete range of equipment and services at ecofastuk.com. Together, they represent the kind of forward-thinking solutions the industry needs. Practical, proven, and built for the real world.
Okay, welcome back. I'm now joined back by Steve, Giovanni and Glenn. We're going to have a bit of a group discussion. We're going to talk about food waste, of course. We're going to talk about the food service equipment industry in general. So how is change being driven at the minute? Is it legislation or is it operators?
We had this conversation earlier. I think depending where you are, it determines your answer. So in the UK, I would say the legislation change in England has led to a greater awareness of the problem, not necessarily that it's being applied properly.
Right, okay.
Whereas I think we were talking about Europe, where there was more an operator drive. Yeah. Hmm. So, yeah, it's twofold. But again, when you delve into the UK, you have both. So a little bit, as Glenn was saying, obviously the waste management and the energy savings and the water savings that you see now when compared to some of the older technology, it is there for everyone to see. So that's a kind of operational saving, obviously, with the reduction of waste and the proper recycling of it, depending what route you choose to go down. I think then it's blurred the lines a little bit between legislation-driven decisions or actually the operators driving it as well. So, yeah, initially I think I would have said quite happily that, yeah, you go down the legislation's driving a lot of it. But in reality, is it? Mm. I think operators and the managers of kitchens or food service are acutely aware of the cost of operating these facilities. So any savings, a good saving.
Yes, I expect also in Europe that more strict rules, laws are coming soon, and so mandatory separation, reporting, redistribution of food. That means that all the operators then have to comply with this.
Okay,
I think that the clarity in the sector is a problem as well, because people don't really know, and there's a lot of conversations about what is legal, what is going to be illegal, what's happening, what can you do, what can't you do, what should I be doing, how can I get the right piece of equipment to make sure I'm compliant, all those kind of things. Against a backdrop of it depends what channel you're in and who owns you. So if you're a larger group who is focusing on that because it wants to and it needs to, particularly in the contract catering marketplace, is they want to prove that they are doing things in the right sustainable kind of way, then yes, they will try and find money to do that. Mm-hmm. But as always in that sector, it's about retention of contract. And when you are renegotiating that, what elements do you actually want to push hard on? And when it comes into the more fragmented part of the independently owned smaller premises, I think it's viewed as being more incidental. And that's somebody else's problem. And by the way, I can't find the money to pay for it, even if I knew what I had to pay for.
Yeah.
Because I think there is that, it's been there for quite a while, Steve, hasn't it? Sort of.
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at your comment about energy saving within the warewash market, also the reduction in size. We see a reduction in size of waste management technology, but also education. You mentioned about if it's managed well, the equipment's run quite well. We find that specifically with my first-hand experience, where somebody's taken ownership of the waste management and now they're source segregating, they're taking the plastics out, it is managed well. But if it's just a decision made by group and it's been enforced on a kitchen and they're not invested in it, it doesn't matter what it is, it's whether it's food waste or warewash or cooking, doomed to failure, really. But if it's managed well and they're trained well and they know what the benefits are, then you usually have no problems.
Yeah. Is it sort of education as well in that period?
I think education is a key factor. I'll give you two examples. We had a private school in Oxford that we work closely with. Language barrier is an issue. So historically, as an engineer, you have these written instructions. Graphical instructions are the way forward now.
Yeah.
So they can see that. And then if you look at the NHS, which is probably one of our largest customers, we don't sell to the NHS, we sell to trusts, working with a local hospital to where the factory is located in the UK, the savings on water was unbelievable. But we changed the way they processed it. So all the waste comes back from the wards and it's stored in lidded caddies. And it's only during the cleanup process, again in the warewash area, that they process the food waste. So we took the... They were running a couple of different machines for 6 hours in total a day. We took it down to 30 minutes.
Wow.
So 10 minutes three times a day, and that's it. You get the food waste into one place, process it. So if you go back historically, you look at the cost of running waste management systems and the water usage, not the same now. It's a totally different animal. So,
okay. Do you see AI coming into this market. I mean, I've seen some units, when we talk about general managing of food waste, that, that are sort of taking photos of food and then working out what was there or how much is, I don't know, are you seeing this? Or
I think that's not going to go away. It's starting. The traction is starting to build on that. It comes back to how many more add-ons can you fit onto a piece of equipment that are affordable, that fit within the needs.
Sort of over-engineering almost to a point.
Yeah, but it's what's needed and what isn't. Yeah. And, you know, though we are no longer part of officially Europe, whatever is happening in Europe will cross 23 miles of water. Manufacturers here in the UK want to export to Europe, and guess what? Europeans want to export into the UK. So we're inextricably linked to what happens there, and this is very much globalised trending that's going on with it, as is the use of robotics, which is will be gathering pace as well. We have the capabilities of doing that. The question is how and when. Our AI processes, at the moment we launch something to tease the market a little bit at Host last year about how by taking pictures of the product you're washing, downloading what your issues are in cleaning and washing those products are, putting it into the machine, downloading it into the machine, and it will then recognise what wash cycles it has to do. So behind every button we've got on our machine is about five options. If you know what buttons to press, and 95% of people don't, they don't know how to change and adapt those wash cycles. Comes back to our connectivity story again as well. But so what that means is, and our German colleagues have come up to the conclusion that by using this AI process, you can save about 17% on running costs on top of what's already being saved. Okay. For instance, it will recognize when business is slowing down. You don't need to be on your fastest wash cycle. It'll go on to automatically go on to an eco mode, so it's using less energy, taking slightly longer to actually wash the products, but that's good because you're quieter, so you don't have to have the quick turnaround of the product, and that will do that. When it starts to get busier, it'll go switch back out of the eco mode and go on to the normal standard mode and also or quicker. So it will do that automatically. So it takes out that human element of knowing when to press a button and how to press it, because the machine will do it itself. And if you're connected, we can tell that machine remotely to do that as well, if required.
I guess the uptake's going to be is slow at the moment, or
there will be an announcement in the coming months that will. And one of the benefits for us is that can be downloaded onto every product we've sold since 2018.
Wow!
So at no additional cost, so it will take that operational complication away from the operator and put it in the hands of the equipment. So that will be very interesting how that works. We're in the throes now of presenting that to various groups. We'll see how well received it is in the fullness of time. But I think very soon it'll just be standard. That's how it will operate. Yeah. And that's how the world will work.
Steve, are you seeing use of AI? Is it?
I think if you look at some of the AI systems that we see in kitchens that are specifically looking at food waste, they're very clever. My only concern is that they identify what you're wasting. So you'll put, I don't know, half a kilo of pasta in there, and you get a report, which is very useful, especially if you look at the type of food waste you're consistently wasting. Then you can dial it back. So I think the approach that we take in parallel with that is where you go in to do a survey or you work with a client to process or manage their food waste, is you want to eliminate as much waste as possible. And then the equipment that we supply is to deal with the unavoidable waste. So it's how you dovetail all those technologies in, and it comes at a cost. So when you're identifying what food waste you're wasting predominantly, and you can dial that back and you become super efficient, is that technology redundant? So, yeah, where do you go from that? And then if you've set up a new kitchen and you've got all the bells and whistles on it, and then you become super efficient 6 months later, a year later, do you need all those bells and whistles? So, and I guess it comes back to good design of the kitchen, good installation, but also good management by the staff.
Yeah, and I think it's that holistic approach to waste as well, because it's all about What happens in the food transport temperature supply chain? It happens at the doorstep. Is it being QC'd when it comes through the door? And are people saying, I'm not having that, send it back, I want something else? It comes back to how it's stored in the premises. Is that correct temperatures for long enough or not enough time, whatever it's going to be? Then compounded by the prep and how much is shoved in the prep because people are inefficient or don't know and have been shown how to trim a cauliflower properly, for instance. Yeah. Or what do you actually then use on that process of making a product ready to be cooked and served? What could you actually reuse in a different way? You know, and it's using everything in the pig apart from the squeal, you know, in some idea, isn't it? You know, it's trying to utilise that in a different way. So those companies are out there that do tremendous work, like Winnow, for instance, and those kind of guys who are really drilling down into that. Mm. I think that actual waste in preparation is improved a lot, but also in that supply chain, because the food companies get that as well. That maximises their profitability and the efficiency of what they do.
I think also the refrigeration, the improvement in refrigeration and the reporting, that ability to see those numbers has reduced from what I see as waste is spoilage that comes directly out of the fridges.
Yeah, that's it,
Because we're all kind of thinking about waste off the plate, but actually...
Yeah.
I mean, we're all guilty of it at home. You've forgotten you've had that and it goes in the bin.
Yeah, the milk or whatever.
Yeah.
Giovanni, what's your view on AI in this sector? Do you see it coming through, you know, in terms of food waste or analysing food waste?
Yes, regarding the analysing process, I mean, through images recognition, it could help sorting a better food waste stream, avoiding like improper material go through the machine. And so can be in an imaginary world a way to certify that waste stream as a clean waste stream. Mm. So in my opinion, that is not anymore a waste. I mean, because if it's properly sorted, that is a resource.
Yeah. Giovanni, how do you demonstrate like return on investment?
Of course, when you are grinding and dewatering material, you are reducing volume and weight of the waste. So in countries where you have the taxation, waste taxation based on volume, on the volume, on the number of bins that the collectors received, of course, if you give numbers where you see the reduction of this number of bins, the return on investment is easy to calculate. Unfortunately, in Italy it's not like this, so return on investment is difficult for us to explain to our clients, but hopefully through European restriction law, it's going to be more clear in all the European countries which are the pathway, the rules that we have to follow. So hopefully.
It's really about sort of reducing that volume, reducing the bin numbers, and that's where the savings come, I suppose.
Yeah, of course. And then in those reality where this resource can be reutilized immediately locally, we are following some project, for example, in Maldives. In Maldives, yes. In small atolls, small islands, where, of course, food waste management is very important because normally food waste is being transported by boats, around long pathways, they say. So it costs a lot. Yeah. So if you are able to generate a system, a workflow, and a circular project where food waste is being reused as a compost on site by locals or like other small village that are close to that specific atolls, of course you reduce what is the externalities, the bad externalities of food waste. So there is a return on investment for sure.
Nice projects to be doing.
Yeah, I would love
site visits or no site visits.
Yeah, it's far away, but yeah, it would be amazing for sure to pay a visit.
Very nice. Just now, some wider sort of industry questions. What do you think kitchens are going to look like in the next sort of 10, 15 years? Have you got a view on that?
For us, I suppose if we specialise on food management, waste management systems, we'll shrink the systems. We'll shrink the footprints, as Glenn said. Obviously, back of house is becoming smaller. and everything needs to become smaller, more efficient. And whether that's in space, energy usage, water, or all of it, I think that's what's going to happen. The pressure I think we're under to, as maybe as an afterthought, that the waste management systems have to be small because it's the last thing you think of. You know, I know you're thinking, Glenn says it's the dishwasher, but actually it's not. The last thing that's the 11th hour of the 11th minute, whatever, it's food waste management. And said, right, we haven't left you any space, but there's a little panel over here. Do you reckon you could put something in there? You know, so if we can shrink it down and miniaturize that technology, then that's where we're going. So
yeah, I think a lot of that, they will get more efficient in lots of ways, but using technology to preempt loadings and when you're busy, when you're not busy, energy on demand, how we know that the guys at Secatronic, for instance, are using that energy usage and how that's used on demand as such. And something we've been used to dealing with as a technology for 40 years as a company. It fits, we understand it, we get it, you know, but it's relatively new here now in the UK. But, you know, trying to pre-guess what the next level of technology is going to be. We know that everybody's coming away from gas and going to electric and lots of induction at the moment. Who knows where hydrogen will make an element of some way, shape or form. What impacts that have on sizing. You look at refrigeration with what Adande did with their drawers, how that got storage close to the cook line. Yeah. That's possible. So you're making that much more efficient. So you're actually reducing man hours in the way you're doing it. So that all those things won't go away and they'll continue. But I think it's that clever use of technology. So it's using it on demand when it needs it and not just, you know, we have this still the scenario out there where everything gets turned on at 6:30 in the morning. We're going to bang on about it again through our connected wash. We can tell people that,
yeah,
because the first wash cycle isn't until 11:30. That's a huge amount of energy every day that is just saved. Having a product on standby that's waiting to go, but it doesn't need to.
Definitely, I totally agree. Great, great points. And Steve, if people want to find a bit more about EcoFast, how do they find out more about your business and?
Through the website.
Yeah, okay.
The website's extensive. It has a whole
host of information. So just Google EcoFast or find you come up. And same, Glenn, for yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think trying to use that website we have, which is an educational informative tool, you can walk and talk around it very easily, and it will give you what's coming next as well. It's not just how we are now. It's what we're going to be doing tomorrow. Okay. And that has to be the way forward.
Perfect. Okay, well, that concludes the podcast. You've made it through. I didn't ask you if you've done a podcast before. Or Glenn seems a media a hack.
Media. No, first time
hope
for me.
I hope you enjoyed it anyway.
It was good.
Yeah. As always, the problem for everybody is getting me to shut up sometimes. But hey, perhaps that's no bad thing.
But thank you all. And I hope you enjoyed it and safe journeys home. Thank you.
Thank you, Radford.
Thank you. Well, that concludes this episode of Kitchen Curiosity. And as we heard from our guests, we talked in detail about the food waste issue in the UK and then across the world as well. Coming up on some more episodes, we've got AMBAC for our next episode. Everyone knows Toby in the UK. We're also going to be at HRC. And we've also now confirmed that we're going to be at hosts in Dubai later in the year. So lots coming up. If you've got any comments or anything you'd like me to talk about, please email me at radford@kitchencuriosity.co.uk. I've been your host, Radford Chancellor, and you've been listening to Kitchen Curiosity.
Kitchen Curiosity is written and hosted by Radford Chancellor and is edited and produced by Tom Anderson. Kitchen Curiosity is a Sound Rebel production.